the baby, river's rising. Old frame house, she can't take one more beat.
This is the final installment of Come Hell or High Water, Remembering the Great Flood of 1916, a four-part audio documentary based on the film by David Weintraub. I'm Kim Clark. Here are some of the voices that we've heard tell the story of the 1916 flood.
22.22 inches of rain fell in one 24-hour period.
And finally, the slides began to come off the mountains.
The water knocked her down, washed the baby out of her arms. My grandmother had to make a decision. Did I look for the baby or get in the barn with the rest of the kids?
Asheville and Biltmore are flooded. People are up in trees surrounded by water, and they cannot get them out of the river. The Swannanoa is a mile wide.
The next day, people were out trying to see if they could help other people.
What they discovered within a few months, or by the next spring, when they started to plant, was that all their topsoil had washed away. They could no longer farm.
As far as the railroad is concerned, I have been amazed that all the damage that was done was repaired within 5 weeks. Their lives depended on the railroad getting back in place again.
People would come together as a group. They would go out and they would actually have barn raising, house raisings. They was a very faith-backed group of people that believed in helping other people and helping them be able to get their house restored.
Could a flood like the one in 1916 happen again here in western North Carolina? If it did, could we rise to the challenge as our ancestors did? James Fox is the director of UNCA's National Environmental Modeling Center, and he shared his thoughts at a panel discussion about the Great Flood held at Blue Ridge Community College.
The 1916 flood is the flood of record that we have on. 1896 was there, but we've had major floods in this region. 1928, 1945, 1977, you know, late 90s, 2004. Everybody hears about the 100-year floodplain, right? That's the 1% chance. We actually have 100-year floods about every 20 years here. And what's happening is we can tell by the record that the severity and frequency of storms is increasing as well, too. The point about the landslides is really a critical one to know, that that's actually the larger danger when we have these very heavy rains. We think about the waters coming up, but it's really the mountainsides coming down that really catch people unaware. Dr. Rick Wooten, who is our state geologist out here in the West, he has his office in Swannanoa. He and his team have actually mapped most of western North Carolina. And you can see these scars. And unfortunately, you know, where one landslide has occurred in the past, it's likely to happen again. But we tend to be building on these scars.
Jenny Jones-Giles is a Henderson County teacher and historian.
The French Broad River frequently, almost every summer, and sometimes several times a summer, will go over flood stage just in a normal heavy rain. That is not unusual. It's not even unusual for the Rocky Broad and the Mills River and some of these other rivers to start hitting flood stage just in normal heavy rains. But when you have a period of a lot of heavy rain, then they're increasingly at flood stage constantly. We get the tail end of hurricanes every time one hits the Gulf of Mexico, particularly when they come across from Mississippi and Alabama. Nature is always going to win. We can build roads and highways above the bogs and rivers and creeks. We can build bridges higher and higher and higher above our waterways and bogs. We can dredge our streams and creeks deeper and deeper and put in landfill higher and higher to build up. But sometime there's going to come another summer of another heavy rain for a lot of the summer, and we're going to end up with two tail ends of hurricanes again, and all the things that man did is going to be worthless.
Drew Brannon lives on a farm on the French Broad River that has been in his family since 1885.
If a flood like 1916 happened today with the same intensity and the same amount of water, it'd be a lot more flooding because the houses have been built. We've paved a lot of the land, and also it'd be devastating to some people. There are houses that would be flooded out terribly because they were building the floodplain. We'd ride around with my dad, and he said, Drew, if you look at the side of the mountains, that if we had a flood like 1916, those houses would be sliding off the mountain because they've built houses. They're beautiful views and everything, but they're not solid for a continuous amount of water, and they would, numerous houses would just come sliding down with mudslides.
I think the people whose families were here from before have learned some lessons, because you notice they didn't go back and build right back where they would be in danger, where the worst of the slides were, where the worst of the flooding was. But since that time, people have forgotten. And people are coming and building in all those same spots.
That's Laverne Haydock of the Bat Cave community in Henderson County.
Frequently, the storms that come through here, when they reach the highland here, the high mountains along the Blue Ridge, will dump their load.
Bill Carson of the Orchard at Alta Pass in McDowell County.
Just recently, in 2004, for example, we had two hurricanes in a row that converged here, Ivan and Francis. And one came from the Gulf of Mexico, one came from the Atlantic Ocean, just like what happened in 1916. And so the mountains really are never free from fear of hurricanes and big rainstorms. In the past, people had their own spring cellars, and they would have apples and they would have vegetables that they'd raised stored in the spring cellars. And they could survive because they were used to, what could I harvest from the mountains? What can I get from my garden? And how can I take care of my neighbor? Those skills have passed us by for the most part. And so to me, the reason for keeping those memories alive is as a warning that says, you know, maybe we have it too easy, but our ancestors were pretty tough and they found a way to survive. So some of their values of independence should still be with us. The survival of our ancestors through hard times shows that we aren't entitled to survive easily, that we're going to have to push ourselves in ways of self-survival that are lost if all you know is the computer and the internet.
People were prepared for emergencies then, and people had skills then.
David Weintraub of the Center for Cultural Preservation, whose film about the 1916 flood formed the foundation of this broadcast.
These voices of where people lived, how people lived, and both the catastrophe of the flood, but also that people joined back together again. When people built back the barns, they built back people's homes. I don't think anyone ever felt like everything was lost, because it wasn't every man for themselves in 1916. We talk about safety net today, but there was a real safety net of people, not some check coming from some government source that is going to be yanked out from under you as quick as it gets to you. That safety net was from people, from your family and from your community. People sometimes ask me, I make these films about cultural legacies, what am I asking you, to go back in time and live in a cave again? And no, I don't. I think we have so many tremendous advances we've made since then. And I'm not saying what we should do is go back in history and go back in time. But I think at the same time, we shouldn't live our lives as if there was no history.
This series has been a production of WNCW and the Center for Cultural Preservation in Hendersonville, North Carolina. It's based on the film Come Hell or High Water, Remembering the Great Flood of 1916 by David Weintraub, which is currently touring the state of North Carolina and is also available on DVD, with more information at saveculture.org. The film was made possible in part by the support of Frank Blasey, Stuart and Carola Cohn, Sandy and Missy Schenck, Green River Preserve, Paul and Simone Shoemaker, Holly Spring Farm, Phillips and Karen Cutright, Bob and Barbara Chapin, and Adept Word Management. The theme music is Muddy Water by The Seldom Seen. Interviews for this program were conducted and recorded by David Weintraub. The film was adapted for radio by me. I'm Kim Clark.